This is Mark Strassman, reporter with Broadband Wireless Access World. We're about to speak to Li Cao, who is the Worldwide Solutions Director at Prano Networks. Welcome to Utopia Media's Broadband Wireless Access World.
Thank you, Mark.
The name of this show is Broadband Wireless Access World, and the slogan of Prano Networks is Carrier Class Solutions for Broadband Wireless Access, so that's a pretty close fit. What exactly is meant by the term carrier class?
Well, it's actually an industry term, and it denotes all sorts of aspects of building a solution from perspective of scale, right? Is carrier class the ability to scale out to support hundreds of thousands of locations, or you know, hundreds of square miles of a hot zone, or scale to support you know, literally millions of subscribers, right? Carrier class also denotes reliability, fault tolerancy, basically all the attributes that are required to be consumed or deployed by a tier one telco-like service provider.
Right. So this essentially means the same level of service that SBC or Verizon can provide on the telephone side.
That's right.
Okay. Well, why don't we build up to finding out exactly what Prano Networks does and how it does it by talking about the history of Wi-Fi hotspots. Could you just say a little bit about when the first Wi-Fi hotspots appeared on the historical scene?
Boy, yeah. Probably in terms of years, I would venture to say that the earliest hotspots are probably 3, maybe even 5 years old now.
Okay.
And it grew out to be very point-focused, right? So a deli here, another hotel here, maybe a cafe here. And they started popping up primarily as a way to provide almost casual high-speed broadband internet access.
Right.
For the casual consumer.
It was not a serious business proposition to start with. It was more a kind of a romantic poet at a coffee house kind of thing, wasn't it?
Yeah, and there's been some false starts, right? So, for example, the precursor of the T-Mobile wireless service that we all know today,
right,
was a company called MobileStar. And MobileStar was running into some, financial situations. And there's been another company called Cometa, which is a very famous joint venture with the likes of AT&T and IBM. And that company is also no longer in business. So, yeah, I would say that this is probably the second coming of the technology and the business models, a more mature second.
What were the problems in the first incarnation of all of this? Who was supposed to be paying for this, and who, as it turned out, I guess didn't use it or pay for it enough?
I think there were points of success.
Right.
Meaning, there even Pronto Networks, we have specific cafes or specific MDUs, you know, multi-dwelling units or
right.
specific hotels that are wildly profitable and very successful. But I think as an aggregate, you know, as a kind of a stereotypical of what happened or what didn't happen, is there wasn't quote-unquote critical mass, right?
Right?
So there wasn't a critical mass of locations. There wasn't, you know, a critical mass in terms of uniformity of user experience.
Right.
You know, some hotspots were really professionally run, you know, like professionally managed around the clock. Others, just proprietors would just put in, you know, commodity consumer grade equipment, and nothing ever worked.
So, right? So some of the problem was a chicken and egg problem that there weren't enough that the level of the system wasn't good enough to attract people on a regular basis, and there weren't enough people using it to finance the creation of a system that people would use.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So if you think about the early days of cellular,
right,
when roaming wasn't quite fully mature and the coverage, I mean, it's debatable the coverage today even, right? But in the early days,
right,
the coverage and the lack of roaming plus the reliability of the service wasn't incenting anybody to go out of their way to consume this stuff, right? So people still use payphones, for example.
Right.
Same thing, you know, in the early days, the 802.11 equipment really wasn't built in yet. It was still expensive,
right,
relatively speaking. I think today, though, you know, earlier this year, I was able to go to a local computer superstore, and I paid $30 for a USB 802.11 device, and it came with a $20 rebate.
Right.
So now, as you scale up to tens of thousands of millions of users, having inexpensive, reliable device in literally hundreds of thousands of locations is, you know, starting to drive at this notion of critical mass, which would support, you know, industry or a market.
So that critical mass issue is a way of saying that Wi-Fi is essentially at the point that cellular was when, as you said, the roaming agreements weren't so easy to understand and the rollout wasn't complete for a lot of people's lifestyles and so on, and Prano is essentially trying to drive that transformation into a more stable model.
That's right. Our contribution to this whole equation is we can take raw, very hardware-centric network deployments,
right,
and transform them into a secure business platform.
Okay.
Right. So we add the ability to manage subscribers.
Right.
We add the ability to to drive revenue models. Right. So take credit cards, prepaid cards, promotions. You know, a banner base, content management, all those to make it a thriving business. And also we provide commercial grade, you know, carrier grade service level agreements. So we can give you minimum and maximum committed information rates. You know, we can block specific ports, or we can unblock them to enable advanced applications like Skype or online gaming.
So essentially what you're doing is you're going to individual medium-sized, large, or even very small Wi-Fi hotspot operators and saying that you can provide the back room and back office functions to hook them into a larger network.
That's right. I just want to clearly spell out where we fit in kind of the entire supply chain.
Right, please do.
The value chain.
Right, or the ecosystem.
Exactly.
Right.
So Pronto Networks, we would never engage directly to, say, a hotel or to a deli, right?
Right.
Our customers would be ranging from very large tier one service providers,
right?
Right, like the telcos we talked about earlier,
right?
Right, down to, for example, maybe you and I get together and go into the business,
right?
Right, because we offer our solution in two flavors. We can certainly deliver it as an enterprise software model where the service provider is running it in their own data center,
right?
Right. We also offer it as a managed service provider, enabling us to become a VNO, a virtual network operator.
Oh,
right.
Explain more about VNO and how that works,
right,
and what that is.
So, just in the same fashion that a teenager would embrace Virgin Mobile, nobody really knows or particularly care that it's really Sprint that's enabling the Virgin Mobile wireless infrastructure.
Right.
Right. The only thing that Richard Branson brings to the table is the all-important brand,
right,
Virgin. Okay. Now, if you and I, Sir Richard wanted to get into the broadband wireless access business.
And who's to say he isn't going to?
Sure. Exactly. We potentially would provide all the infrastructure, the 24/7 monitoring, the end user call center support, the tier two technical support, the management of the services. We would proactively alert their team if a particular network node was down. We basically enable any particular group to become a virtual network operator.
Well, as I'm sitting, you're giving me some ideas here. As I'm sitting here looking out the window, I see a little satellite dish from DirecTV, I guess the logo on it. If I wanted to put a wireless transceiver here out on the balcony and set myself up as Utopia Media Wireless, could I then hire Pronto to manage to do everything else after I installed it and plugged it in?
Yeah. Now, yes, all that is true. There would be a minimum scale,
right,
where it would make sense for you to do business with us and for us to do business with you.
Right.
Right. But if you had a sense of that scale, then absolutely. The only thing Utopia Media would do is the branding, the marketing, the promotions,
right,
et cetera.
Okay. What could you be a little more specific on that? How many subscribers would I need to think I could get to make it a viable proposition?
Yeah. So we as a company, each particular project is slightly different from a cost perspective.
Right.
But I mean, we could do some sketching on the back of the napkin
right
now, if you wish.
Right.
So let's say you want to talk about a hot spot, or you want to talk about a hot zone?
I'm sitting here in a residential neighborhood in the San Fernando Valley. They're mainly apartment houses. There's some single family dwellings nearby.
Right.
As far as I know, from my own experience, the only way people can get broadband is either through the cable company and the phone company, both of which shall remain nameless, but both of which are monopolies, and both of which charge a pretty considerable amount of money to provide their service.
Mm-hmm.
So there are hundreds of people within a 300-foot range of here.
Right. Okay. So let's talk about that. Let's say you went ahead and installed some of our equipment, and we could talk about the cost aspects
right
later, right?
Right, right.
What it costs. But let's say you went out and you purchased a T1 line.
Right.
Yeah, 1.5 megabit.
Right.
That may cost you anywhere from $300 to $600 out in the open market.
Right. Right?
And then you add on to that, so on an OPEX perspective, maybe, I don't know, in the low hundreds of dollars as a management fee,
right,
pronto.
Right.
Okay? So now let's say your monthly outlay is about $800 to $1,000.
Okay.
Okay. Now, if you can get 50 people to pay you $20 a month.
50 people times $20 a month, right?
That's $1,000.
Right. So that would cover anything. Any more people essentially would be able to make a little profit.
Yeah, or if you had 100 people buy a day pass at $10, that's $1,000.
Right.
Right? And that's if you use T1. Now, what to say that you can get a pretty nice DSL link for
right
$100 a month.
Right.
Now, your cost basis is less than $500 a month.
Well, let's say I can get a nice EVDO connection for $79.99 a month.
Yeah. I think the latency and the raw bandwidth of EVDO. So what would be the bandwidth of that?
I'm not sure. I'm still looking into that. But essentially, then I could go to the people who the different providers that provide that EVDO and get the backhaul over the air,
mm-hmm,
and then set up the Wi-Fi transceiver, and so it looks like my costs are down to $80 a month plus the cost of the equipment.
Yep.
The initial outlay.
Yep.
And you'll take care of everything else.
That's right.
So you've essentially set up yourself as a company that can help people as small as one-person companies or groups to propagate more Wi-Fi and make it lower the point of entry for them to a pretty low point.
Absolutely. Some very important people in the venture capitalist
right
market space
right
have basically told us, hey, the reason why you're very interesting to us is because you've removed the barrier for people to consume wireless technology.
Right. Now say again all the things that you could do. Let's say we've set up Utopia Media Wireless, and I've done this. What are the range of services and procedures that you can that you'll accomplish for that company?
Well, the entire life cycle. Okay. So let's say you did put up a little hot zone around your neighborhood.
Right.
Okay? So from the time that your neighbor says, hey, look, there's a new SSID out there called Utopia.
Right.
Let me connect to it.
Right.
That splash page, that welcome page that says, hey, welcome to Utopia Media.
Right.
If you're a new user, please click here to purchase a plan. If you're a returning user, please type in your username and password.
Right.
Right. Or you might have passed out some free promotional codes to your friends.
Right.
And they can use that for free.
Oh, right. Right.
Now, so let's say the user either buys time or, signs in as a return user.
Right.
Then, once they're logged in, we would provide the proper bandwidth management. Right. So for example, the guy who bought the premium package from you
right
may get more bandwidth from the friend that you gave free access to.
Right.
Right. So we would handle the service. Now let's say your backhaul link, so your DSL, your T1 line,
right,
stop responding.
Right.
Our technology, our integrated solution, includes a little device at the location, or sometimes to drive a city, it's a large device.
Right.
But it's smart enough to check in with our central software.
Right.
And if it fails to check in, then our data center, which is manned 24/7,
right,
would take proactive action.
Send me an email or call me and tell me something.
A lot of that is automated, so the alerts are automated.
Right. Right?
But worst case, an actual person, a support technician, would call you.
Okay.
And let you know.
Now let's say I want to bring the local businesses into the picture as advertisers.
Mm-hmm.
What could you do in that regard?
Yeah. So it's just using various existing technology that we enable. Okay. So for example, after a user gets properly authenticated,
right,
instead of just arbitrarily taking them to their home page that they designated,
right,
we can redirect them to yet a welcome page,
right,
a success page.
Well, what's new in the neighborhood today page.
Yeah, exactly. Now then it will be up to, in this case, the VNO operator,
right,
to either put in, you know, you could put in pay-per-click links on there.
Right.
Or you could put in ads by Google.
Okay.
You can do whatever you wish.
I could link them to the Utopia Media News Networks page and let them go there and click some Google ads if I could say that in public.
Yeah, sure.
Okay.
You could. And you could also put in a click here if you want to, buy a house in this neighborhood or rent an apartment in this neighborhood.
Right.
And if there was a realtor that you had a reciprocal agreement,
right,
such that when they rented an apartment through this link,
right,
then you also derive some revenue.
Right.
That's all possible as well.
So I could make business arrangements with local shopkeepers and local real estate people or any other kind of business people and connect to their home pages or have ads from them.
Sure.
And you would manage all that?
Well, all that, at that point,
yeah,
it would be transparent, right? So,
right.
So we would just redirect to a particular web server. So we're not in the business of like Yahoo Small Business or web hosting.
Right.
We would just point to a web presence,
right,
that you manage yourself.
Okay. Well, this sounds pretty exciting. Maybe we'll back channel talk about actually doing this. In the meantime, let's talk a little bit more on the global scale and tell us a little bit about the origins of Prano Networks as a company. Who put it together? When?
Okay, sure. It was founded roughly 4 years ago by a gentleman, Jasbir Singh.
Right.
And essentially, he's what people like to call him a serial entrepreneur.
Right.
Okay? So he's had a very rich and robust history of working with emerging markets.
From some of the background I looked at, he's both been been involved with carrier class operations as well as content providers.
That's right. That's right. So he saw, a window or an emerging trend, which not only has to do with Wi-Fi or 802.11 per se,
right,
but the ability for, you know, expansive and very large-scale network deployments in the future, right? Because while 802.11 and Wi-Fi is what people are still deploying today,
right, right,
obviously there's a lot of talk about WiMAX,
right,
right, 802.16. There's also 802.11-based mesh technologies that's being deployed today.
Right. Say just a little bit about what that is, the mesh technology.
Yeah, so in our example, we only talked about one little neighborhood deployment.
Right.
A couple of different variations could happen. Let's say your one neighborhood project became wildly successful and you were interested in building out yet another neighborhood.
Right.
Right? Now, there's two ways you can attack that problem. One is you can, you know, find somebody who lives in that area and kind of buy another T1 and buy another access point and kind of just start doing it that way.
Right.
Right. And by the way, that's where the strength of Pronto really starts flexing because we're a centralized OSS software solution.
That's OSS is Operations Support System.
Yep.
Right.
Or just, you know, a centralized software solution.
Right.
We have the ability to manage both of those locations as one cohesive network with two locations.
So,
versus two separate one location network.
So in fact, it wouldn't have the next step in this path to world domination wouldn't have to be in an adjacent neighborhood. It could be on the other side of L.A. or in fact in New York City for that matter.
Or Ankara, Turkey,
and you could manage that as well.
That's right.
So essentially, if I talk to all the people I talk to on the World Wide Web around the world, and they all wanted to get started along these same lines, Pronto could integrate that into a slightly splotchy and sporadic network, but one that was global almost from the beginning.
Yeah, absolutely from the beginning, and it's one cohesive system, right? So for example, each of the subscribers from one location could seamlessly access, if that's what you wish, access any other location. It's one customer database, it's one prepaid data source. Everything's very organized.
Okay, well, right? Let me try one more example and give away a business plan here. I attended some, covered the story and attended a demonstration a week or so ago about digital cinema.
Mm-hmm.
And it was pretty impressive. It was in Hollywood, and I talked to these people from T-Systems, which are closely related to T-Mobile. They're all owned by Deutsche Telekom.
Right.
And I asked them when we could expect some digital cinema theaters in the U.S., and they said, well, there aren't really any yet, but there are 120 in Europe. And I said, where are they? And they told me that Berlin and different places. And I said, why don't we do a tour of the great digital cinema theaters of Europe and let people go travel there and executive jet or something and visit all those digital cinema theaters.
Mm-hmm.
If I had people in those neighborhoods or those theaters themselves, for example, together, if they set up Wi-Fi within the confines of their digital cinema theaters, they could presumably aggregate into a Utopia Media digital cinema theater network all over Europe, and while the people were there attending those cinemas, they could also have Wi-Fi seamlessly.
That's right.
Okay.
Exactly. So anyway, that's a little bit of a detour about the power of the platform,
right?
I call it.
Well, it sounds very impressive.
Yeah, exactly. So now I wanted to define how you could accomplish the same thing with mesh.
Okay.
Okay.
Please.
What mesh technology does, and it was basically derived from the military.
Okay.
Now imagine this: it's derived from this battlefield scenario where each individual soldier becomes a node in a network.
Right.
Right. So as people move around, the idea is they still have constant communication.
Right.
So what happens is in a mesh topology, the first radio has the home, it's designated as a gateway.
Right.
And that has internet connectivity to it.
Right. Essentially backhaul.
Exactly. But its neighbors, its second and tertiary neighbors, two or three nodes away, they're smart enough to create basically a self-organizing and self-healing network, all connected back to the gateway. So you would not need, if you have 10 mesh nodes, you would not need 10 points of backhaul. If you have 10 access points, you could do some wireless bridging and whatnot, but by and large, each access point is expecting its own individual backhaul.
Right.
In a mesh, it's smart enough to realize it's part of a collective, and it can get its backhaul from its neighbor.
What kind of distances are we talking about between radios in a mesh network?
They vary, but it's standard 802.11, so it depends on the power of the antenna.
Right.
So you might get it's in the thousands of feet, maybe a quarter mile.
Now, one of the other Utopia Media websites is called MIMO World, and I've been doing interviews with people. I talked to someone at Ergo a few weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
Does the MIMO technology, when you say it depends on the strength of the antennas, MIMO uses multiple antennas.
Right.
Is a MIMO mesh network going to be particularly powerful?
Different vendors have actually come out with multi-antenna and multi-radio feature sets in their hardware today. So, for example, they may use 802.11b and g to communicate to the end subscriber, but there may be an extra radio inside that speaks 802.11a, and that their primary job is to communicate to the node next to it,
right?
Therefore, creating a much stronger, according to their specifications.
Right. So essentially, A is used on the for the hops from mm-hmm. mesh node to mesh node, but B is used to the consumer.
Right. Because in the standards wars, I think B and G, from the consumer perspective, is got the nod over
Okay, and again, Pronto's value added is that it can manage this whole system.
Exactly. So we can ride, we can drive rather, you know, basically any hardware brand, you know, any type of technology, whether it's Wi-Fi or mesh, you know, and we're all working hard with Intel. Intel's one of our funders, working hard with Intel to make sure we're the de facto software platform for WiMAX and beyond.
Okay, yeah, so I want to talk about that next, the transition. Essentially what you're saying is the name of the company is Prano Networks, not Prano 802.11b Networks.
Exactly.
The idea is that as WiMAX becomes more widely deployed, you'll be able to do the same things that you do for Wi-Fi networks with WiMAX networks.
Exactly.
Or hybrid networks.
Exactly. And again, you know, if you look under the covers of why our company is so interesting to different industries and different sources of funding.
Right.
It's because of that, right? There were a lot of people who maybe kept their day jobs and decided to create a little hotspot type of solution.
Right.
Right. And that market is very crowded, and you know, the difference is we're very regimented software engineering focused organization.
Right.
We have proper backing by some very large industry companies, and they're backing us to make sure that there is a business platform capable of, you know, driving these other next generation networks.
Okay. Well, talk a little bit more then about how you see that evolving, and whether the individual system originators, how they would work with you to do that, and essentially whether they would start with Wi-Fi and then move to WiMAX, and how that would happen.
Right. In today's world, what's happening is as we design larger and larger networks,
right.
It's the preferred design schema is turning out to be what we call a dual ring network.
Dual ring?
Right, ring, like D-U-E-L-R-I-N-G. Right.
Okay.
Two rings.
Right.
What you have is a WiMAX like inner ring. Okay. Because it's pre-standard WiMAX. So without, I don't want to say any particular brands necessarily. But
right.
You have point to point and point to multi-point networks.
Right.
Right. And you build that out. But then what they end up, the inner ring does, is it feeds the outer ring. Right.
Right.
The outer ring is the mesh technology.
Right.
And then the outer ring is what the end user connects to, right? So what that does is, let's say you have 10,000 or 100,000 subscribers,
right.
That enables the end subscriber to use commodity devices, 802.11 stuff, the one you can buy for $30 and get $20 back,
right?
Versus having some much more, you know, less commodity, more proprietary, higher cost subscriber units.
Okay.
Right? And then what happens is the inner ring basically provides fixed wireless backhaul to the mesh.
Right.
Right. So as you scale out, you can just continue growing your inner ring and expanding your outer ring. It's a proven approach that Pronto and our kind of our partners have evolved to together.
Okay, and that essentially fits in with the timetable for the emergence of WiMAX in a way that
exactly.
Optimizes the transition.
Yeah, exactly, because as you may know, the first initial draft of the WiMAX standard
right,
calls for WiMAX to be used more as fixed wireless backhaul scenarios
right.
More than mobility.
Right.
Right. So, it's a perfect evolution.
Okay.
So you would just kind of plop that in as the next generation.
Right. Now, speaking of the word evolution, there's something called EVDO, which is Evolution Data Optimized or Data Optimization.
Mm-hmm.
How does that fit in technically, and how does that fit in commercially with what we've been talking about, if it does?
No, it does. It definitely has a complementary flavor in our minds.
Right.
Because what's happening is you get these convergence, right? So we've already used convergence a couple times. You get the convergence of devices. You get the convergence of networks.
Right.
So where technologies like EVDO and GPRS and Edge and all that stuff meets Wi-Fi
right.
Is this industry term called mobile IP.
Mobile IP.
Right.
Okay.
And essentially, since we're a software solution, we're in a position to, you know, support or coexist with mobile IP network topologies.
Right, so you're agnostic as to whether the IP is transmitted by a Wi-Fi network or a cellular network that calls itself EVDO.
Well, I wouldn't go that far.
Okay.
Because we're primarily a wireless data, and I would never want to represent ourselves or have the reader think that we're out there also competing in a pure cellular, like GPRS type CDMA project.
Right.
But here's how we would fit, though.
Okay.
Let's say a particular user in the future has this really cool device, right?
Right.
And it's capable of speaking EVDO when it's not within a range of hotspots.
Right.
Right. But it is dual radio capable, right?
Right.
So what we would do is we would take on the role of managing this device and this user when he's in a hotspot,
right?
Right. And we'd cooperate with the mobile IP layer to hand off the session such that when he gets out of the range of Wi-Fi,
right,
then it automatically switches over to Edge.
Okay. Now, apropos of that, I just read that the most recent press release from Pronto Networks had to do with using SMS to order Wi-Fi.
Right.
How does that work, and how is that an example of what you've just talked about?
Okay. So that particular announcement is technically not related to mobile IP.
Right.
This is a very innovative way to use SMS in the U.S.
Right.
What happens is, let's say you're within the network of a Pronto powered wireless location.
Right.
Right. We're leveraging SMS as a form of micro payment.
Okay.
All right. So what happens is you pull out your Nextel or your singular phone.
Right.
You punch in the requisite SMS code.
Right. Right.
And then in return, it gives you like a real simple access code.
Right.
Right. Now you use that access code on your laptop or your PDA. It's not tied to the phone.
Right.
And then you use that to gain access.
So you essentially buy a ticket to the Wi-Fi network.
Exactly.
with your cell phone.
Exactly. And the charge for that session shows up on your cellular phone bill.
And that way it's good for 20 minutes within a 24-hour period?
Yes.
And yep. So that means if you just occasionally need to use it, you don't have to pay for a monthly rate, even a daily rate. You're paying for a 20-minute rate. And because of the automated capabilities of the networks, you're able to make that work for everyone concerned.
That's right. And you even kind of touched on one of the advanced features, which is it is not 20 minutes, period. We definitely support what I'm about to say. I'm not sure how this service is set up.
Right.
We support time in two different manners.
Okay.
One is like a parking meter, where after 60 minutes, even whether you've consumed 60 minutes worth of access or not,
right,
that session is no longer valid.
Right.
Right. And we call that continuous. We also offer another variant, which we call discrete,
right,
which is to say, let's say you have a week or a month, right?
Right.
The duration, your access time is still 60 minutes, but you can use 15 minutes now, and you would still have 45 minutes to use later, possibly next week.
So if you're going on a trip, for example, and you buy 20 minutes and you're waiting in the one airport, this is a fantasy, for only 10 minutes for the plane, then you could connect to the hotspot then, and then when you're back, depending on what you were doing, if you were flying Lufthansa, then you could do it on the plane, and then when you landed and you're waiting for the cab or something, you could do another 10 minutes there, and that would use up your 20 minutes.
That's right.
Okay. Let's talk about consolidation and the business model and how this is all going to work out in practice and where Pronto Networks sees itself in the upcoming consolidation as both an agent of it and as a recipient of it. What can you say about that?
Consolidation, can you just give me a little bit of detail? What angle, what perspective are you referring to?
Well, from the point of view of aggregating smaller VNOs, and from the point of view of how you're going to relate to the telcos like SBC and Verizon, and whether you're going to provide services for them, enter into joint agreements with them, or I don't want to suggest this is the only thing you're going to do, be acquired by them and become the division of SBC or Verizon that manages Wi-Fi hotspots.
Right.
For them.
So from my perspective, I see us continuing to be a provider of enterprise class software,
right,
provider of carrier class software.
Right.
We've never been in competition with the service providers. Right. So I don't see us morphing our business model all of a sudden start to offer wireless service ourselves.
Right.
We've always been in the business to enable others, be it large or small, to get into that business.
Right.
So it's interesting. When you say consolidation, that's actually been something that's working to Pronto's favor. Right. So any small organization, so the small and medium service providers, well, to them, consolidation is going to have to mean some certain type of exit strategy.
Right.
They're either going to merge or get bought out by a larger concern.
Right.
And people have actually told us that it's very favorable, even to their exit strategy, to have Pronto Networks as part of their intellectual property portfolio.
Right.
Right? Meaning it's much more interesting as a potential, you know, being acquired if you have a carrier class infrastructure versus some open freeware that you've downloaded over the internet.
Right, because again, it positions that part of the network as a carrier class or enterprise ready or just generally competent operation.
Yeah, and it actually can justify way more value in your company to a potential, you know, acquirer.
Okay. I've been following the story in Philadelphia about their plans to move forward with a municipal-level, metro-level Wi-Fi network. Have you specifically been in touch with the people in Philadelphia, or is there anything you could say in general about the idea of cities getting into the Wi-Fi business and how Pronto might be able to work with them in doing that?
Yeah, absolutely. As far as cities in general,
right.
Pronto Networks, dare I say, is currently the de facto standard as far as software platforms go.
Right. Okay?
So we count on our existing customers that's announced cities like Corpus Christi, Texas,
right.
which when it's fully built out will be over 140 square miles
right.
large. Right. And the other interesting thing about Corpus is today they have police, fire, EMT, automated meter reading, and public access
right.
all on the common infrastructure.
Why don't you say something about SSIDs or multiple service set identifiers and how that ties in with what you just said about Corpus Christi as offering public access to users as well as public safety support for the city workers?
Yeah, so I would say there's four features that contribute to the ability to sustain a multi-use or mixed-use network.
Right, mixed-use.
Right, so you have multi-SSID, which is basically, you know, different, the first thing that people see, right, different identities of the first notion that there's a wireless service out there.
Right.
So we support multi-SSID. We also support multi-VLANs, right?
And how does that work?
So multi-VLANs basically enable you to pair up a segment of the network,
right.
so it literally appears like a completely separate network,
right.
but yet it's part of a common infrastructure.
So essentially, here in Los Angeles, if we had a lot of neighborhoods doing this, it would be possible, for example, for the city to use it at one level of security for itself,
mm-hmm.
and for customers to use it at a lower level of security where they wouldn't have to be authenticated so much, whereas it could provide virtual private networks for some group of people, but not for others, and they could pay accordingly, and all
exactly.
of these could ride on the same hardware plant.
Right, and it's not only multi-VLANs that enable that, but
right.
it's the requirement for all these real robust features to all together to get that done.
Okay.
Right? So, for example, what you just, let me finish up the other four, and I'll address what you just said.
Right.
So, there's also this notion of external authentication,
right.
and there's also branding.
Okay.
Right? So these features, along with, you know, QoS and others and VPN support,
right.
right, enable us to deliver that vision of what you just described.
Okay,
right, which is everybody in a secure and orderly manner,
right.
all sharing the common infrastructure.
So essentially, the public first responders would have priority over the network, and they'd have a higher quality of service. But other people could use it when they didn't need it, essentially.
Yeah, yeah. Or just as a courtesy to the citizens to improve tourism, right? To
right.
improve as a catalyst for economic development.
Right, and again, the advertising infrastructure support that you provide could be worked together with that.
Yep,
to build the tourism. Okay. Could you talk specifically about how a lot of these things that we've just been talking about came together at the CTIA conference last week, and what Pronto Networks did there, and how that showed off a lot of these things?
Sure. CTIA is a very large industry event, right, that's sponsored by the Wireless Association.
Right.
So between March 14th and March 16th, they held a very large event at the Ernest Morial Convention Center,
right.
So M-O-R-I-A-L, in New Orleans.
Right.
So now, coincidentally, Pronto had been working with MCI/SkyTel,
right,
on a hot zone project. So we took this particular CTIA wireless event kind of as a catalyst to showcase our joint solutions together.
Okay, and, so, and who are the different companies that were involved in it?
So the specific companies were MCI/SkyTel, right? It's a SkyTel unit of MCI.
Right, what do they do when they're on their own?
They provide wireless services, including things like two-way paging.
Okay.
Right, SkyTel paging is
right.
what they're best known for.
Okay.
And now they're getting into the hot zone business, right? Driving or running very large-scale networks on
right.
behalf of different municipalities and other people.
Right.
Tropos, T-R-O-P-O-S,
right.
was the mesh technology used for CTIA.
Okay, we got a picture of their transponder on our on this webpage.
Okay, good, yeah. And Motorola was involved. I think Motorola was providing the fixed wireless backhaul.
Okay. Is that called Canopy?
Yes.
Okay. I was listening to the BBC 2 days ago, and they're using Canopy in South Africa to provide some wireless functionality out there.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. In fact, you know, Pronto, just to give you another flavor, we can provide everything I just said, subscriber management, revenue management, whether it was Tropos or a direct Canopy, right? So, for example,
right.
if somebody, a small business or another location just wanted a straight shot point-to-multipoint Canopy,
right.
Pronto can support that as well.
Okay.
But back to the CTIA, basically, it was Tropos, Motorola Canopy, SkyTel MCI, and Pronto as the secure business platform.
Okay, and what were the capacities, the characteristics of the system that you built? How long did it take you to build the system there?
It was literally measured in, you know, number of days.
Right.
Right. So it's a very rapid deployment schedule.
Right.
We allowed the SkyTel/MCI team to design their own welcome page.
Right.
Right. And so they had full creative control over that.
Right.
And the overall capacity, because it was 802.11, it's just standard, you know, 11 megabits.
Right.
I'm not sure the size of the backhaul,
right.
know, but that would have been the upper limiting factor on the throughput of the network.
And how large an area did the network cover?
For CTIA, it covered several city blocks,
right.
Around the convention center.
And how many people ended up using it? Do you know? Approximately?
You know what? I can tell you, because it was a fully managed network,
right.
we have all those statistics.
Okay.
You know, I would venture to say that it was in the hundreds of sessions per day.
Okay. And did people pay for it, or was it? Did you give it away to show everyone how it worked?
Yeah, this was provided as a courtesy.
So
we did not charge.
So anyone who had a 802.11 compliant device was able to use it?
That's right.
Okay. And what kind of reaction did you get from the people who were there?
Well, I tell you, this most of the people that actually went out of their way to make some comments
right.
were very positive.
Right.
Right. So, you know, it was a good, reliable service, and they appreciated the being connected back to their corporate world or back to the rest of the world while they were at this, you know, industry event.
Now, what kind of role model and or ongoing relationship did this create? Or is this a model for future deployments, this, the kind of synergy and cooperation amongst these companies?
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, we fully expect to do more and more projects with MCI and SkyTel.
Okay, now people who want to do this, is the best way to do it? Let's say the city of Los Angeles or some other city decides they want to take advantage of all this. Would their first point of contact be Pronto Networks or Motorola or Tropos or MCI SkyTel? Where's the interface with this aggregation of
right.
technology?
There's actually a whole bunch of entry points, right?
Right.
So specifically to cities and municipalities,
right.
because the way that they're created, a lot of times it's a complete public bidding process.
Right.
Right. So the RFPs posted right on the web, et cetera. So as a result, Pronto gets its prospects, you know, like potential customers that we work with.
Right.
From all different ways, okay? So a lot of times people will contact us directly.
Right.
So to validate what you just said, this maybe a city director of IT within the city will call up Pronto directly.
Right.
Okay? Or they'll call up one of our partners.
Right.
And we all know that, hey, not any one company, Pronto included, can make a project by ourselves.
Right.
So we'll basically also receive some... I guess opportunities from our partners.
So it's a little bit like that, like a mesh network. You can come in at any point, and you're connected to everybody else.
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly.
Comment a little bit. We're going to wrap up in a few minutes here.
Sure.
About where the United States stands in relation to Asia and the European Union in terms of its deployment of Wi-Fi and WiMAX and what you see as the business implications of that, and where Pronto stands on sort of the global elements in what may be a cooperative or cooperation and competition amongst these different areas in building out wireless networks.
Right. So I would say this. I would say that the U.S. specifically
right.
Traditionally has been slower in size and scale and customer adoption
right.
than Europe, and then also, very specifically, in Asia. Right?
Korea and Japan.
Yeah,
and
South Korea is like probably the most inundated. Right?
That's what everyone says. Is the broadband there principally wireless or wired? Do they have fiber? Do they have Wi-Fi? How do they do it in Korea?
Wi-Fi.
It's largely Wi-Fi?
Yeah.
Okay.
And wireless in general, but, you know, very, very much entrenched with Wi-Fi.
Say something about the world's largest potential market for this, as for everything else, the People's Republic of China. What's the situation there now, and are they going to be able to essentially leapfrog developed countries by going immediately to the kind of systems that, for example, that you're talking about, the inner ring and outer ring with WiMAX and Wi-Fi? Will the Chinese be able to take advantage of that in a really impressive way, do you think?
I don't have 100% visibility towards that, but
right.
the visibility I do have actually leads me to believe that there's political and cultural differences
right.
which will actually impede their ability to adopt technologies as is from the rest of the world.
Meaning right? it makes the flow of information too free for the government to appreciate it?
Meaning I've seen evidence that the government is mandating differences in terms of how the technology is used.
Right.
Right? And different rules about how the technology is governed.
Right.
You know, different rules about who can directly access the internet or which port has to be blocked. Right.
So. Right.
So certainly, as the you know the world's largest potential economy, they are poised to really leapfrog everybody.
Right.
But I think there's signs of from a more of a political angle
right.
that they may not. That's not the road they're going down.
Okay, so in fact, the irony may be that a lot of this equipment is going to be manufactured in China, but it's not going to be deployed there.
Exactly, just like shoes, right?
Right. The people, they'll be barefoot, wirelessly speaking, but they'll be cobblers at the same time.
Yeah.
say a little bit what you see now about the future of wireless broadband in the next 2 to 3 years and the part that Pronto Networks is going to play in that future.
Sure. So a couple different dimensions here, right? So I think right now, predominantly, all these wireless networks are providing access.
Right.
And access to Pronto is a service, but it's the first and most rudimentary basic service that you can provide.
Right.
And email as a closed second, right?
Right.
Browsing the web.
So it's a little bit, we're talking like in terms of cooking, we're talking about water, getting water and electricity into the kitchen.
Yeah.
But we're
exactly.
not talking about what we're going to prepare.
That's right. Or yeah, if you're making a salad, it's just the lettuce, right?
Right.
The most basic ingredient that
right.
you need to make something good.
Okay.
As we're evolving, right?
Right.
The advanced services, for example, I don't know, video conferencing, right? Live
right.
live video, interactive information,
right.
and massive games. We actually have a customer who we're deploying at thousands, potentially thousands of bars and taverns because they have a technology which enables a jukebox to be connected to the internet.
Right.
Right? So these jukeboxes can serve, you know, unlimited number of songs, right?
Right?
It's only limited by their licensing agreement.
Right.
Whereas a traditional jukebox can only handle 500 or 600 songs, and somebody
right.
has to go every week or every month and swap out old CDs so they could play new music.
Right.
Right. So we're in there today, you know, just lighting up, you know, providing wireless access to these locations.
Right.
But in the future, you're going to see things like trivia games, dating games, things that's going to either attract a particular user to that particular bar.
Right.
So that bar gets to sell more food, more drinks.
So essentially, they can offer what you just said, network access to a million to an unlimited number of songs, or a dating service that would use video conferencing. All the people in all the bars in all the world who are connected to this could do a speed dating with a million people in a night.
These are all things that are, you know, being conceived as a conceptual standpoint or
right.
developed as we speak.
And the Pronto Network management system would enable people to take those ideas and bring them to fruition and implement them across these networks.
That's right, with very low barrier to entry.
So in fact, almost on the same mile about the Utopia Media wireless company that would set up in the neighborhood, Utopia Media speed dating service could be set up in all of the bars in the world. Using the back office and support services from Pronto Networks.
That's right, and we also make sure that the users in these bars and taverns are isolated from the other devices, like the point of sale system,
right.
the jukeboxes,
right.
So all the different devices and all the different user profiles happily coexist on the same network infrastructure.
Okay. Can you say a little bit about the corporate structure at Pronto Networks? The company is privately held now?
That's right. Just let me say one more thing about the future.
Please.
So in addition to all these innovative services,
right.
I think the devices themselves
right.
right, will also become much more softer right in the future.
How do you mean?
Today, you know, for example, there's in the early days, it was strange to see somebody pull open a laptop at a Starbucks.
Right.
Today, it's commonly accepted.
Right.
right? Today, predominantly, the devices used to gain access to the wireless network
right.
is still a laptop.
Right. right.
So it's big, it's hard, it's somewhat bulky.
Right.
Right. Now, you're seeing more and more of these smaller PDA or hip-top devices, or, you know, so the devices are going to get less visible.
Right.
Right. And certainly in the future, you can envision a time where the technology is soft, like sewn into the fabric of your clothes,
right.
rather than you have to take out a hunk of plastic or a hunk of iron, right? And it's going to be a lot more discreet to communicate like that.
This used to be called wearable computers.
Yeah, but I think I wouldn't go as far as saying that's what's in the future. It's more like it's going to be part of your person
right.
rather than a detached piece of plastic that you have to pull out.
Well, you're not talking about implants here, are you?
No, I'm not trying to go right. off that angle from you, but I just see a number of whole bunch of services coming in the future,
right.
and it won't be so awkward to consume those services, meaning you won't have to sit at a bar with all the grease and the
right.
food and such and open up a laptop.
Right, without getting too specific, you're saying essentially people will have earbuds for the audio, And a key, or we haven't talked at all about speech recognition as a means of accessing all these devices. But presumably, if or people wearing headsets. When I do my video interviews, I wear a headset to cut back on the feedback, of course. You're essentially saying that this could be built into headset-like apparatus that people could use.
Yeah, whatever it is, that's going to be much more personal and soft.
Okay.
You know.
And so it's essentially then people could customize that for their own lifestyle and aesthetic sense and whatnot.
Yeah.
But then that would all be integrated into the entire network.
That's right. And you can see evidence of that already in the cellular industry, right? Like, is it a PDA? Is it a phone? Is it a calculator? Is it a watch, right?
Right.
It's all starting to morph.
Right. Walkman, download, video,
exactly,
and so on. And all of that can be managed through the systems that Pronto Network sets up.
That's right.
That's another name for all this, is, as I understand it, is Eutopia. And I'm very glad that you were able to explain about the technology here that's going to make it all possible.
Good. Okay. So as far as the organization of Pronto,
right,
it is a privately held company.
Right.
Our VCs include the Intel Capital Fund.
Right.
Right. Draper Fisher Jervison.
Right.
And also BV Capital.
So presumably In the future, do you expect that you'd more likely go public or be acquired or just carry on, or what's your exit strategy at this moment?
I think the market and Pronto within the market, we're all riding this humongous wave,
right?
So I think it's too soon, really, for anybody to speculate whether the exit strategy of Pronto is going to be go public or be acquired. But I think you know, we're in a perfect position, to use like a surfing analogy. We're riding the crest of the wave,
right,
and we're just all kind of hanging on for dear life, seeing how high this wave is going to be, right? And once it kind of, you know, explodes, and then we'll have plenty of options in terms of what we want to do.
Okay, it sounds like a good place to be.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, well, I want to thank you very much for talking to us on Broadband Wireless Access World today, and I hope we can check in again in the future and see how some of these developments are evolving, and keep our listeners fully informed.
Yeah, appreciate the opportunity, and keep in touch.
Okay, thanks very much.
All right, take care.
Okay, don't hang up, but I'm going to turn off the operating system here. Thank you.